Parshas Vayikra, and of course we will begin to talk about the Haggadah, since we are now in Nisan, and of course there are always themes in the Parsha that are linked to the Inyanei Diyoma, the events, the time that we find ourselves in, relevant to the time. So what we're going to do first is look into the first Pasuk in Vayikra and identify a certain theme. And then we're going to extend and develop this theme in relationship to basic ideas that we need to know about the Seder. So we begin by understanding that Sefer Vayikra is called Toras Kohanim. The whole Sefer is called the ideas, the statutes, the information relating to the Kohanim, to the Mishkan, to the service in the Beis HaMikdash. And there is much in this Parsha and in the Sefer about the service in the Beis HaMikdash, including Karbanos. We will not talk specifically about the different Karbanos today and the reasons Karbanos were brought and the rationalization, the understanding of the whole that major part of our life, which was sacrifice of animals. This we will not deal with today. But what we will address today is some of the philosophical underpinnings of the whole institution of Karban, as expressed through words in the first Pasuk. Now let's look at the following two words that demand further investigation. The first and second Pasuks. Firstly, in the introduction of this whole area of sacrifice, the first word used is Vayikra el Moshe, and everybody sees the small Aleph, right? Okay. Vayikra el Moshe v'yadabar Hashem elav me'ol moed lemor. So the entire concept of Karbanos is introduced with the word Vayikra, written differently than it's normally written with a small Aleph. Now, the reason that you probably know that this word is written with a small Aleph is because there was a type of a debate here, a philosophical debate between Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe did not want to write the word with a large Aleph. Hashem wanted him to write the word with the large Aleph. Moshe was resistant, so he wrote the Aleph, but he wrote it small. He didn't even want to write the Aleph at all. Now, Rashi gives us a clue into this, and he says the following. The first Rashi, L'chol divrot, every time Hashem made a statement to Moshe, U'l'chol amirot, every time he spoke to Moshe, B'lashon amira, or Lashon dibor, which we have spoken about in this class, or even B'lashon tzivoy, a command, Kadma kriya Parshata Lashon Chiba. Okay, this comes from Torah's Kohen, Parshata, it's a source here, Lashon Chiba. Kadma Kriya Lashon Chiba. First, before there's a Dibra or an Amira or a Tzivoy, there's a Kriya, there's a call, and it's Lashon Chiba. Before Hashem actually speaks to Moshe, he tells him, I'm calling you to tell you that I'm about to speak to you, and that indicates love, because he allows Moshe to prepare to receive this communication from Hashem. The fact that Hashem gives him time to prepare himself to receive the Dibor, the Amira, or the Tzivoy indicates that Hashem loves him. He doesn't want to spring it upon Moshe, so Moshe will be in a state of panic or chaos or confusion. He wants to make him able to accept it completely in calmly, and be able to therefore receive the full impact of the communication and not have it something that just overwhelms him and he lives through it, but he doesn't grasp it and he doesn't integrate it. Now, we've all had this experience. There are situations, sometimes crisis situations, emergency situations, situations that just happen upon us even for the good, that we're not expecting, and something happens. And if we're not ready for it, it comes and it goes, and we wish later on that had we just known it was coming, had we just been prepared, we would have enjoyed it so much more. There would have been such a more deeper satisfaction that we would have known how to react to it if we just would have had preparation for it. Right? It could have been that much more meaningful. So the fact that Hashem allows Moshe to prepare is Lashon Chiba. Go on. It is the same Lashon that the Malachi Hasharish Meshtam Shimbo. This is how the Malachim behave. They call each other. And of course, this is a reference to what we say every day in davening. B'kara zel zevi amar kadosh kadosh kadosh. Before each malach says kedusha, it is prepared for that event by another malach that calls to it and allows that malach to ready itself. Now, this is mystical. We won't develop it here, what this means. But the fact is that even in the highest spheres of the spiritual, there is a sense of preparation before experiencing or receiving or expressing something. So, so meaningful. Now, however, though, aval nevi'e umot ha'olam, but regarding the prophets of the other nations of the world, nigla lehen b'lashon arai v'tuma, Hashem appears to them chaotically, in an instant, without any preparation, and that's a sign of tuma. Tuma means distance from God. We've learned this. Tuma means if there's an opaque, non-see-through barrier, mechitza, between the person and God, that's tuma, keeps the person distant. When Hashem is not close with the person, doesn't want the person to develop a connection to Hashem, he just appears to him, and the person is traumatized, experiences that prophecy, and really doesn't integrate it, and doesn't change because of it. It goes too fast. And it's too disconnected from who they are, and they can't process it or take it in, and it ultimately doesn't change them, and doesn't affect them, and that is tuma. That's a state of tuma, and Hashem appears to them in this state of tuma and arai, a haphazardness. Shenemar vayikar Elokim el Bilam. Hashem appeared to Bilam, and the word is spelled without an aleph, because vayikar means it was a mikra. It just happened. Mm-hmm. Something happened to me. Mashu kara. Something just happened all of a sudden I wasn't expecting. Vayikar, just all of a sudden something befell me. As opposed to vayikra, Hashem called to him and prepared, allowed him to prepare. One is great love, one shows great disinterest. Okay? Doesn't want a connection to be built from this communication. Wants it just to be impressed upon the person, and the person gets all shaken up, and then the person doesn't know what happened, and they remain traumatized, but they had an experience. Now, why would Moshe not want to write Vayikra? Why would Moshe want to write Vayikar, that Hashem just happened to appear to him? This is our question. Why would Moshe want to downplay the love that Hashem had for him? We have to look into it deeply. It obviously can't be a simple reason he's humble. We have to look at, of course, humility is part of it. Obviously, it's the core of it, but deeply, what type of humility and where does it come from? Now, in order to understand this, we're going to ask another question first, and one answer will answer both questions. We have another very confusing or mystifying statement in the second pasuk. And the statement is like this: Dabar al b'nei Yisrael v'amarta aleihem, speak to the Jewish people and tell them, Adam ki yakrev mikem korban Hashem, a person, a man among you, brings an offering to Hashem, etc., etc., he should bring it from the following animals. Well, the word that we're focusing on here is the word Adam. The Pasuk is speaking to B'nai Yisrael. And the Pasuk tells them, any person who brings a korban should bring it from the following. Obviously, a person is going to bring a korban, not a fly or, you know, a spirit. It's obviously a person. Correct. A goyim can bring a korban also, but here he's speaking to Klal Yisrael. He says, Adam ki yakrev mikem, a man from among you. He's speaking to the Jewish people. He's not addressing this now to the nations of the world. Now, the word mikem also. How about saying Adam mikem, one of the people among you, if he brings a korban. Adam ki yakrev mikem, a person who brings a korban from you. We are separating Adam and Mikem here, also kind of an awkward way to phrase the pasuk. So obviously the Torah is trying to tell us something, and Rashi tries to answer it, but as usual, the answer leads us to greater questions. Rashi says here, Rashi Beis, Lama Nemar Adam. Why does it say an Adam? So here's Rashi's answer. Ma Adam, and he brings it, of course, from the Medrash, Vayikra, Rabbah. Ma Adam Harishon Lo Hikriv Min HaGezel. Shahakol Hayashalo, just like Adam Harishon, didn't bring a korban from that which was stolen. Why not? Because everything belonged to him anyway. Afatem lo takrivu min hagezel. So you also, when you bring a korban, don't bring it from that which is stolen. A few things. First of all, we're told, when you bring a korban, don't steal an animal and bring it as a korban to Hashem. Which we understand is a corruption, obviously, to steal and then offer it to God. This is, very twisted. But Rashi is telling us that one of the fundamental principles about karbanos is that it must be antithetical. It must be there must be no taint of gezel or thievery in your karban. This is a critical idea, and the Torah says Adam You should not have any geneva in your associated with your carbon. Now that is a fundamental principle. So we have to understand that. What is the association between the carbon and gezel? Why of all things, don't have impure thoughts with your carbon, don't be dishonest, don't give a carbon that you don't really mean. Yeah, there's so much, but don't let gezel be involved. We have to look into the association between gezel and the carbon itself, and we also have to see why Moshe didn't want to admit that, didn't want to write for all to see that Hashem allowed him to prepare.
Why is Adam
Exactly, that's another thing. In Adam, everything belonged to him, so it wasn't from the Gezel. Kal v'chomer, you, who you could steal, it's really not a strong Kal v'chomer. The Kal v'chomer would be the opposite. The Kal v'chomer would go the opposite. You who could steal, you shouldn't. Kal v'chomer, someone who can steal, shouldn't. It's a strange, awkward Kal v'chomer, yes. And this reconnection to Adam. So here's how we start to answer both questions. The word Adam, man. Okay, we always think that we're called Adam because why? What is the reason we are called Adam? Because we come from the Adama, correct? We're called Adam because we come from the Adama, we come from the earth. However, there's a problem with that. Do we entirely come from the earth? Isn't the most important part of us not from the earth? Isn't the most important part of us from the heavens? So why are we called Adam? That's basically telling us that who you really are is dirt from the earth. Afar min ha'adama. So Rav Hirsch explains like this. Don't think about the word Adam first. First think about the word Adama. The word Adama. You know, it's Adam with a kamatz and a hay at the end. Adama. The kamatz under the mem and an additional hay. We always use a kamatz and a hay and link it to, when we link it to a place like Artsa, Mitzrayim. What does that do to the word when we add the kametz and the hay to the place? To that place. Artsa, to the Eretz. Mitzrayim, to Mitzrayim. Okay? So what does Adama mean? To the Adam. The secret here is, that Rav Hirsch tells us, really Rav Breuer tells us this actually, but this is the Masorah that he draws from. Rav Breuer explains that Adama, of Solomon by the, it was still in Germany, tells us that Adama, the earth itself, its essence is that it serves Adam. It's le ha'adam, to the man. We are not called Adam because of the Adama. The Adama is called Adama because it is at the service of man. It's le ha'adam, like Artsa to the Aretz, Mitzrayma to Mitzrayim, Adama, to the Adam, which means to say all things physical, all things contained in the physical world on the Adama, all things that exist on the Adama, which means all of life, physical life, is legitimate and purposeful and can be defended as valuable only under one condition, if it is in the service and dedicated to the Adam. Now the Adam is part physical and the Adam is part spiritual. The Adam has a neshama too. And the Adam has a body. And all things physical are only of value if they can be defended. If somebody can stand up and say, this physical pleasure, this physical acquisition, this that I'm involved in now, indulging in now, in taking into myself now, utilizing now, is in the service of Adam, which is part Tzelem Elokim, and of course part physical. So any time we make use of what this world has to offer, in a way that is in no way connected to our spiritual existence, to our purpose of being here, it is gezel. It is stolen. And we have no right to take anything from this world and use it in a way that cannot be said to be leha adam, for the adam. And when we say adam, we mean for the selam elokim adam, for the spiritual adam that has an eternal future. Everything must be utilized, must be able to be defended, that it serves that purpose to build up the spiritual, physical, that strange being that is in harmony, the two aspects that combine together. And we use the physical to access the spiritual, of course. Our hands do a mitzvah. We use our hands to do a mitzvah. We use our mouth to do a mitzvah. But as soon as we do the mitzvah, it is no longer confined to our hands or to our physical speaking apparatus. It leaves and transcends the physical and lives forever, eternally, in its own sphere, and as part of us, of course, in its own sphere. Let me just mention an idea here that we've said before to understand this. As everybody here is easily, instantly recognized one to the other by our physical features, right? So too in the next world, as I'll tell us, our entire personality is retained. Our sensitivities, our sense of humor, who we are is completely retained. It's just disembodied. It's not associated with the body, but our personality exists. And as we have physical features here that make us instantly recognizable one to the other, so too in the next world, we will be instantly recognizable to each other. We will know who we are immediately because we will have spiritual features. And our spiritual features are our personality and how our unique personality is expressed through our Torah, our mitzvahs, our tefillah, the chesed, the kavanas in our head. All of that is us. And we will be known to each other instantly by who we are in our essence. So the mitzvah that we do here with our physical apparatus, as soon as it's done, is released from the confines of this world, time and space and physicality, and becomes us, becomes our features, and lives eternally in the spiritual part of us. So it's never stuck here. Anything we do in this world that is dedicated to the Adam, the eternal Adam, that somehow serves a purpose which is edifying and spiritually building us up and morally building us up, that is legitimate. Any other way we use the physical gifts that Hashem has given us is gezel. So when we get into understanding a carbon, when we dedicate to give this animal to God, right? So what we're saying is, I wish I could, if I could give myself, I would give myself, but you hate human sacrifice, so here is a representative, a stand-in from me. And it is not from the gezel, which means this symbolizes that my physical existence, as expressed through the animal, is free of gezel. Who I am today, and all that I've surrounded myself with, and what I've been involved in, is free of gezel. That's the objective. Now here we begin to understand Moshe, why he didn't want to say Vayikra Hashem el Moshe, that Hashem called him, because he loves him, and he wanted him to prepare. Moshe had a sense, and this is the essence of his humility, and Chazal tell us, that he also was maybe guilty of gezel, or some type of genevas das. Because Chazal tell us that the level of revelation that Moshe was zocha to, that he merited, was out of proportion to Moshe's own preparation. That even Moshe himself, the greatest tzaddik on earth, could never have, on his own, raised himself up to the level that would allow for the amount of Gilui Shechina that he received. And the reason he received that clarity, that clear aspaklaria me'ira from Hashem, was only on behalf of Klal Yisrael. Not for him, because he deserved it, but because he was the one to transmit it to Klal Yisrael. And he deeply understood that the amount of revelation he's getting is out of proportion to who he was. And it was only on behalf of Klal Yisrael. So how can he write Vayikra, that Hashem loved him and told him to prepare for the revelation, when that revelation was something that was a free gift, that he felt he wasn't worthy of, that he was using without having deserved it, and benefiting as their leader without having earned it. And so he didn't want to write Vayikra, he wanted to write Vayikar, it just happened to me. Because that would indicate the real truth of how he understood the Nevuah. It just came upon me, and not because it reveals that I was so close to Hashem and I was ready for it. It just happened that it was given an unworthy person that just benefited from something from way beyond them. So Moshe felt that he also was perhaps guilty of a certain type of gezel, of taking, using something and not being able to defend it, because he's using something that's not really, that not really is coming to him. That wasn't coming to him based on his preparation. Now, all of these ideas become very significant when we start thinking about Pesach. Okay? Yes? Hashem wanted him to write Vayikra. Because he wanted to show the great love that he had for Klal Yisrael and for Moshe. But it was Moshe's own sense of honesty. It's not really. What there is that there's a human being, Moshe Rabbeinu, who's like a malach, okay? And the Torah is just telling you through this little aleph that Moshe himself was aware that the nevuah he was getting was on behalf of Klal Yisrael, and not really something that on his own, if he wasn't representing them and speaking to them, teaching them, he didn't feel like it could have been his. This is explaining to us the humility of Moshe, giving us a glimpse into his essence. Moshe, humility doesn't mean I'm not so smart and I'm not so strong and I'm not so pretty. It's not lying and being kafoy tov and not acknowledging Hashem's gifts. It's saying Hashem has given me gifts and I don't deserve them. And they're free gifts. And someone else who doesn't have them does not because they're a worse person. Hashem has meted out different free gifts in this world. And everything I have, I accept them. I thank God profusely for them. I don't deserve them. It's more than I've earned. I haven't earned this. People who are much more worthy than me who don't have this. And that's the essence of humility. And with Moshe, it wasn't about I don't deserve this good health that I have, chas v'shalom, because better people than me don't have health. With Moshe, it went to the extent of, I don't deserve this level of nevuah. It's all for Klal Yisrael. And how can I... And he felt a certain difficulty in writing Vayikra.
But the... Yes. The gezel that you take, which means the concept of gezel, is that you're taking something that...
You're taking something that... Right. So Moshe felt he was... True. This is all true. On the other hand, it's a little, he feels genevas das to write Vayikra. And that's true. Someone has given him something that he feels humbled by and doesn't want to express it as if it's really him. But let's develop these ideas in terms of Pesach, okay? These ideas of the concept of legitimizing everything that's ours, and having a sense of humility by the fact that do we have something that's ours that is we're not worthy of, okay? One of the fundamental rules of the Seder, this is basic to the Seder, okay? A person must say Pesach Matzah Mara, right? You have to say Pesach HaMal Shema, Matzah Shema, Mara Shema, you must say. Now, of course, we read last week, in Parsha Sechodesh, that when they ate Korban Pesach, they ate it with Matzah and Mara. And we spoke about Matzah and time. We know that the reason that one of the proofs in the Haggadah that we have to speak about Pesach Matzah Maror is because the pasuk is V'yigadeta levincha b'yom ahu le'imor, you should tell your children on that day saying Bavur zeh, because of this Asa Hashem li, right? Hashem has done to me b'tzei sidi Mitzrayim, and now, okay, Bavur zeh Asa Hashem li, because of this. In fact, this is how we answer the children, right? We say the following to the Russia. So what do we say to him? Be'emar, Bavor zeh, asa Hashem li, betzeisi mi Mitzrayim. Because of this, Hashem did for me, when he took me out of Mitzrayim. Now what is Bavor zeh? So, Yochol mi Rosh Chodesh. Talmud Lomar, you think you could start talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim, the halacha is to start talking about starting Rosh Chodesh Nisan? No. Talmud Lomar, Bayom hazeh, Habayom hahu, on this day. Ibayom hahu, Yochol mi Bodyom, you should start talking about it when it's still daytime? No. Talmud Lomar, Bavor zeh. Talmud Lomar, that phrase, Bavor zeh, because of this. Bavor zeh lo amarti ela b'sha sheyesh matzah u'marar munachim lefanecha. When you have to speak about Pesach, when matzah and marar are in front of you, which means at night, at the Seder, and we learn that from the words Bavor zeh, because of this, because of the matzah and marar, so you only speak about Pesach. When there's matzah and marar, because they have a mitzvah to tell your children, because of this, Pesach matzah and marar, which is now in front of me, only at the Seder, right? Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, right? That's the way the halacha is learned. You have to tell your children about Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the words you have to use is b'avur zeh, on account, because of this, Hashem took me out. And you only say those words when those things are in front of you, so we learn you speak about Yetzias Mitzrayim at the Seder. Okay? So the word b'avur zeh, because of this, relates to the Pesach Matamar b'avur zeh, because of this, asa Hashem li b'tzeisi mi Mitzrayim. Now, let's understand that phrase a little bit. Because of this, Hashem did great things for me, and he took me out of Mitzrayim. Because of what? Because of the Korban Pesach, the Matzah, and the Maror. Do we really mean to say this? Let's think it out. Wouldn't it be clear if we said, Zeh ba'avur, these things, Pesach, Matzah, Maror, are because God did great things for me when he took me out of Mitzrayim. Isn't that what we're trying to say? Because of these things, because of the Korban Pesach, Zeh Bavur, these are because, this Pesach, this Korban Pesach, the symbol, this Matzah, And this Marah, Zeba Avor, this is because Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. That's why we're showing these things on our Seder plate. So why does the Pasuk say, Ba'avor Zeh? Because of these things, Hashem did great things and took me out of Mitzrayim. We touched on this last week. We have to think about the Pesach of the people in Mitzrayim compared to the Pesach in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, compared to our Pesach. There's really two models for Pesach that we can express, okay? We can demonstrate. Pesach Mitzrayim. They're sitting in their houses before Chatzos, eating, right? They're eating their Korban Pesach. They shechted it already earlier. They're sitting there eating a Korban Pesach. Now, we mentioned this. Let's make it clear. Why is it called Pesach? Asher Pasach. Hashem skipped over the houses. Did Hashem skip over the houses when they were eating Korban Pesach? Had he skipped over the houses yet? They shechted the animal, ate it from Ben Harbayim, from the beginning of the evening. Hashem didn't skip over the houses till Chatzos. So they're eating Korban Pesach on account of a miracle that didn't happen yet. Clear? And they're eating it with matzah. And we spoke about this. Why do we eat matzah today? Because lo hispik betzekum lahachmitz, because their dough had no time to rise, because they were rushed out of Mitzrayim. But when did they leave Mitzrayim? The etzem hayomaz and broad daylight. And when did they know they were going to leave Mitzrayim? Many, many, many hours before. Already the day before. So, they're eating matzah, we said, on account of the fact that their bread didn't have time to rise when they left Mitzrayim, which didn't happen yet. And they're eating maror, why? Because mararu es chayehem. They embittered our lives. Maror, right? Al shema. Why do we eat maror? Right, here it is. Zesh maror zesh anu ochlem al shema al shum shemeruru hamitzriyim es chaye avoseinu b'mitzrayim. They embittered our lives. So they're eating maror while they're in Mitzrayim as slaves, with chaos all around them, with an Egyptian nation that's ready to attack, push them out as fast as possible, and they're remembering how they embittered their lives, which doesn't need to be remembered because they're still living through it. It's not like 100 years have passed and we're remembering anything. It's like people in the Holocaust eating maror to remember how they embittered our lives. So again, they're eating maror to remember something that's not yet a memory. That's not yet in the past. All three of these foods that they ate are commemorating Nisim and events that didn't happen yet. That the bitterness is a memory, that their dough didn't rise, and that Hashem will pass over the houses. So, what were they thinking when they ate these things? We spoke a little bit about matzah, about the elimination of time last week, but my grandfather explains that at the core of these three things is the Jewish people sitting in their homes in Mitzrayim were eating these foods because they were demonstrating one major, major spiritual accomplishment. What they were doing there was showing that they had emunah that these nisim will take place. And that one day in the future, they will commemorate these nisim. But right now, they were not commemorating them. They hadn't even happened. This was a statement of intense emunah. We are eating these things with total trust that the nisim will take place. So, that's how they celebrated Pesach and Mitzrayim. But later on, when there was a Beis HaMikdash and when there was a Mishkan, that wasn't the same Pesach. Later, when they had Pesach Matzah Maror, it truly was to remember the events of the Yetzias Mitzrayim. Mm-hmm. But then when we went back into Golos, like now, whose Pesach are we celebrating? The Pesach of the Beis HaMikdash, where these things were a memory? Or the Pesach of Mitzrayim, where we have emunah they will take place? We are celebrating Pesach Mitzrayim now. We eat Pesach, Matzah, and Maror because we too have emunah that Hashem will distinguish between the Jews and the non-Jews, will make all our bitterness and our suffering a memory, a distant memory that no longer can hurt us, which is why you make the charoses, which reminds us of the mortar and the bricks, sweet. Mm-hmm. Why else would we make charoses sweet? It's the bricks. It's the torture. Right? You make the charoses sweet. One day, we know that everything our parents' generation, our grandparents' generation suffered, and we suffer, and people in our soul suffering, it will be a memory sweetened by understanding. And we know that we have emunah like they did, that the geula will come so fast and change everything so radically that as if our dough wouldn't have time to rise. We also have emunah in that. We have emunah in the same three things. Hashem will distinguish between us and our enemies. In other words, justice will be restored. The geula will take place and nobody will be able to stop it, and it will be sudden and instant. And our bitterness will be sweetened by understanding. We also have that emunah. We eat the Pesach Matzah Marah today with the emunah the way they ate it then. Now we go further. We're going to focus today on Pesach, the Korban Pesach. One of the things, deeper levels of understanding when we eat the Pesach, not just that Hashem is a God of justice and will distinguish between them and us, which is Pesach, He will pass over the houses. But look, we say Pesach Shahayu Avaseinu Ochlim Mizman Shebeis HaMikdash HaYakayim Al Shema. Why do they eat this Pesach? Al Shum Shepesach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Al Batei Avaseinu B'Mitzrayim. Now look what it says. Pesach Shahayu Avaseinu Ochlim Mizman Shebeis HaMikdash HaYakayim. The Pesach they ate when there was a Beis HaMikdash was because Hashem passed over the houses, right? But the Pesach they ate in Mitzrayim was Emunah. Now we understand, by the way, why do we say ba'avur zeh asa Hashem li b'tzeisim mitzrayim? It's not zeh ba'avur. This is because Hashem did great things when He took me out of Mitzrayim and I'm remembering it. It's ba'avur zeh on account of the fact that I ate Pesach Matzah Mara. Hashem did great things and took me out of Mitzrayim. That's the pasuk. Ba'avur zeh, because of this emunah, that's why asa Hashem li, Hashem did things for me, b'tzeisim mitzrayim, and He took me out of Mitzrayim. So now we say, but when they had a Beis HaMikdash, they ate it because they were remembering the nes that took place of skipping over the houses. Rav Hirsch explains that the whole mitzvah of taking the lamb on the 10th of Nisan and preparing to shecht it on the 14th of Nisan, which went with all kinds of other side commands that were associated with it. For example, you had to take a lamb. It was your lamb, selah bais, for your house. And you had to gather your family, your children, your spouse, your relatives. And you had to prepare in advance that this will be the family unit that you will eat the lamb with. And if the lamb was, you had a small family and you had a big lamb and you only need a kazayah, so you bring in another family, but it must be prepared in advance. And it must be in your house, with the doors shut, with your family, the lamb that you took and that you prepared. Rav Hirsch explains that the basic fundamental building blocks that first had to be established to be able to transform this nation of slaves to man, to Adam, is to establish the autonomy, the integrity, and the ability to judge, to rule oneself by establishing that this slave, who up till this point is not autonomous, this slave is neither a father nor a son. He is a slave to a master, and his family allegiances are irrelevant to the master. The master doesn't care about whose son he is and whose children and the children he has. He works only for the master. He's not allowed, he's not privileged to have an autonomous family unit that nobody can interfere with. To turn a slave into a man is to first establish that this person is an individual with his own rights, with his own autonomy, and he is somebody's father and somebody's son and not someone else's slave. And secondly, that this person has property that belongs only to him. Property ownership is the basics of creating the sense of an independent person, an Adam. That everything he has belongs to him and nobody can come in and take it. And it's his, and he owns it, and he can defend it, and no one has rights to it. So you take a seh, and it's mine. And then I have, and who's going to eat this? My children, and my spouse, and my parents, whatever. And I have a deep sense of understanding that no one can interfere with that familial bond and break it up. And where will I eat it? In my house that you can't come into. That's my home that I rule, with my values, that's untouchable to you. You stay out. It's closed off. The basic building blocks that Hashem had to ensure were created and understood before there could be any type of nationhood born is the sense of an individual an individual family, property, and space, the home, that's untouchable to everybody else. This is the basics of freedom of a human being. My own Dalet Amos, my own circle. And we said last week that the blood they put was Os Lachem. It was a sign. It wasn't for the Malach to know who was a Jew or a non-Jew. That's ridiculous. It's simplistic, right? The Os Lachem was that you put the blood on your two doorposts and on your lintel, the top piece, the roof piece, so to speak. And then you close the door and you sit in your house. And you look at that blood and you know that that blood came from the seh that we were just slaughtered. That we took and we protected and we took care of, which was ours for 4 days to get them used to ownership, autonomy. Their private space that no one can interfere with. And then you slaughter that in dedication to God. And you put the blood on your doorposts. And in Mitzrayim they had 3 altars. The one doorpost, a second doorpost, and the lintel. Those were the 3 mizbechot that the Jewish people had in Mitzrayim. That was their mizbeach. That is where they offered their blood of the Korban Pesach to God, which means we have been invested with freedom, with dignity, and with autonomy. And it is all in the service of the one free God. We as free people choose to dedicate ourselves to the service of Hashem. That's the master we choose, and not a master that we haven't chosen and is forced upon us. We have a master. Of course we're slaves. All we did is switch our masters. We went from matzah, which in the beginning of the Seder is lechem oni, the lechem of suffering because we were slaves to Paro, to the end of the Seder, afikomen, where it's still bread of slavery, but it's slavery to Hashem, which is ultimate freedom. We just switched our masters, but we're still eating matzah, which is the bread of a slave. Just the question is who we're a slave to. It makes all the difference. So when we look at that blood on the doorpost, on the mizbeach that we've offered that korban to, we say that we have chosen to dedicate ourselves to the one God who is real, as we spoke about last week, who has been understood by us to be real and absolute and of all the things we talked about and beyond time and eternal. And now we become eternal. We become an eternal people because we have been attached to eternity. And by the way, I should give this, talk about this in December, when people are making their plans to go away. Because there is a very strong value, seriously, to being in your house, in your Dalet Amos, sitting around your table, which is our Mizbeach today, with you, our children and the people we've included, and saying this is the home that represents the core strength of our nation, because it's not the temple that's our core. We live without a temple for a very long time. And it's not the state that's our core. We live without a state for a very long time. It is the home that is the core that we carry with us when we are stateless and without a Beis HaMikdash and without a king. It's the home that we set up that was established in Mitzrayim, that we have a home, and these are our, this is our space. And into this space, our values dominate and no one else's. And in this space, we gather our children and we tell them who we are and what we stand for. And the home becomes sanctified. Pesach represents for us that he skipped over our sanctified homes and only went and was able to smote the Egyptian homes. Our homes were protected. That is why it's called Leil Shimurim, the night of protection forever. You know, you don't say the whole Shema on that one night of Pesach. It's called Leil Shimurim, the night that we are watched and the night that we are protected in our homes, where chaos is reigning outside. We are protected in our home. We spoke about the idea in the beginning of Gezel. The concept of our own home, our own property, our own family that we own and that's ours and no one can take it from us is established on Pesach also. We built our foundations of our nation not on Gezel, not on misusing the things that Hashem has given us, and not on the fear that someone will break in and take our things, take our what we built, and not only our physical things, our spiritual things, what we represent. Pesach is the time where our house, we have a sense of the legitimacy of our all things we've built for ourselves in this that are represented by the concept of our home and our life and the family in it. And we can say to Kadosh Baruch Hu, this is everything you've given us to own, that you've given us ownership. We are allowed to be owners. We make sure that from this point on in, we use those things in your service and not in our service. Because if Hashem has given us freedom and Hashem has given us autonomy and Hashem has terrified our neighbors so they cannot come into our home and they cannot disturb our harmony and our values, and Hashem has given us ownership abilities to own things in this world and make them ours, then if we use those things in a way that has nothing to do with God and is strictly for physical, temporary pleasures that come and go and are part of our spiritual features in the next world, then Hashem has given us all this for nothing. We might as well have been slaves that own nothing and don't deserve to own anything and are given nothing. Because once Hashem gives us so much, if we don't use it, it's gezel. It's considered stealing right from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we've been given an opportunity to own things, to have the autonomy. By the way, an application of this is that we are not a communistic society. We are a capitalistic society. There's no question about it. We believe that people can use their initiative, their ambition, their creativity to succeed and in business and make as much money as they want and have as many things as they want. In a certain way, we do believe that. Of course, this is coupled with chesed. It's coupled with chesed and tzedakah that goes hand in hand. But we don't deny a person the right to acquire, to build a life, to use all of their abilities to succeed. We don't believe in that. That people should be stunted and held back and everyone should be anonymously equal. We don't really believe in that. We do believe in ownership. We can own things. The Torah doesn't speak about not owning and not having which is ours. But what we learn from Karbanos and what begins to be established by Pesach is everything we own, we are sacrificing on the Mizbeach. Okay, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and which means to say it is all in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Otherwise, we have no right to it. That's really the essence. And the seh itself, and that this will wrap up, and the seh that they slaughtered, who is that seh? The seh is the Jew. The seh is the Jew. Hashem is the ultimate shepherd. The single sheep watched by a single shepherd. We are the seh. There are so many references to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as our shepherd, right? Ro'enu, we say in benching and davening, Ro'enu Hashem is our shepherd. We are the seh. And we are showing here at Pesach, you've given us our own integrity, our own autonomy. And what we ultimately will do with that is we dedicate it back to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why we have been given freedom. That's why we've been given chayrus. That's why the Jewish people brought freedom to the world. There would be no notion of freedom without us here. The whole concept wouldn't have began to develop if not for the precedent we set that being slaves to another human being is evil and being dedicated and, so to speak, enslaved to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is noble. So here as we sit in Pesach, and we'll continue talking about some other aspects of the Seder next week, sitting hopefully in the home, if not in the home, imagining the home, and at least the concepts that we are, that we have an enormous amount of freedom to act in this world, and enormous amount of freedom to have things and to build things in this world, but the overriding idea of all of it is that it is like the korban, ultimately dedicated up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therein it finds its legitimacy. I want to wish everybody a wonderful week.